I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back to the Lenten Rouge Cycling Podcast weekly show. We've got recaps of the Tour of the Alps that was on last week, as well as a preview of Tour de Romandie starting tomorrow with its best start list for quite a while. News that Remco Evenepoel wants to ride the classics in 2025, a women's Milan San Remo contract and extension. Rumor mill is heating up with Vibas announced, not even a rumor, this morning, and Tratnik rumored as well to be leaving Visma-Lisa bike, as well as, yeah, some other juniors, and Alaphilippe, the Total Energy news has reared its head again. But condolences to Benji. Broke his bike. Is it, I saw this, you posted on Twitter or Instagram, is it salvageable or finished?
I reckon it's finished. So I put my bike for traveling in a soft bike bag, and you know, you got at the front, you've got the fork. What do you call the what at the back? The that holds the wheel. The what?
The chain stays. The stays, right?
That's a weird English word, but the chain stays. Okay. In there, on the right one, there's a bend to the point that it has widened my chain stays. So if I want to put in my back wheel, it's in loosely. So I don't think I should ride on a bike that where the back wheel is in loosely because it's too wide. And it's an alloy frame. So yes, I could maybe get it put in the right place again, but it's unrealistic for me to do so in 9 days, because in 10 days, I'm coming to you, man. I'm coming to you to ride my bike. And there is no bike right now. So I impulse bought a bicycle, and hopefully it's a good one.
Okay. Well, you're running a soft bike bag.
Yeah, I was running a soft bike bag, Cycon Aero Comfort, but looks like the bike wasn't so comfortable in it.
Wait, so who did it? Who did it to you?
I don't know. It just, during the travels from Belgium to UK, something happened.
Okay, well, there's no one to call out then. But I guess, rest in peace, Benji's bicycle. Tour of the Alps was last week. Dot Pro Race. It had a few riders tuning up for the Giro d'Italia, namely Geraint Thomas and or Tobias Foss, as well as Ben O'Connor, who'd been at altitude for Decathlon Azur d'Azur. And it was, as we said in the preview, not like the best parkour in my opinion, but in the end, some of the stages were actually quite exciting. Yes, the first three, like horrendous scenes, but the third one, Juanpe Lopez struck out from far with Pellizzari, and everyone looked at Foss in the leader's jersey, and Juanpe won the stage by 38 seconds to the main group of Foss, the main GC guys, with O'Connor, the Bahrainis, and Bardet. And then El Patron Benji like fully came back. I swear this guy gets 100 watts to his FTP and plus 100% charisma the second he puts on a leader's jersey. And by the way, El Patron is like, just like with GC Kuss, El Patron is now literally what everyone calls him. Like El Patron Lopez. I was like, we made that as a joke. Well, not even a joke. He is El Patron.
Like, he himself is calling himself El Patron probably at this point, because he's acting like it. I swear there were moments in this race where he was once again like trying to get somebody to pace after their teammate, stuff like that. It would make no sense. But he would get them to at least do one turn every time, because they were like, I'll do it. Please don't hurt me, El Patron.
Get El Patron to Qatar for the peace talks, I say, or he can get groups together. I mean, this guy, he's somehow getting people to pace for him. He was, the CPA needs to speak to El Patron. If you want to fix the safety issues in this sport, just give El Patron the leader's jersey for the first 80% of the race, and he'll calm everybody down. And, you know, tongue in cheek aside, he looked, okay, is he a sitting duck? But then he's not, he's got a 38-second lead, and there's no mountaintop finish here. And his team is not the strongest in the mountains. There was Gebregs, Gebir, I think, and Verona for the easier climbs. And then stage four was super hard, really difficult for him to control. And in the end, he controlled it perfectly despite many, many attacks.
I still think that there were moments where he didn't have it under control, that he was under the, what do you say that, the race itself was going to decide how it was going to turn out, because he was individually in a group behind someone that attacked. For example, in stage four, Simon Carr was up the road, but in the group behind, in the El Patron group, O'Connor attacked, Harper attacked, Harper was up the road, ends up crashing. O'Connor was unironically riding towards a solid lead to the point that I was considering that he could win GC from that attack. And he ends up crashing too, dropping back to the group that El Patron is in. So I think if that crash doesn't happen, which it's part of cycling, unfortunately, crashes are part of cycling, stuff like that could have made a different outcome, if that makes sense.
True, you're right. That was he did get lucky there, because Harper, was on the hoods, and then he comes into this really bumpy road surface section at high speeds and just basically slides off and can't correct in the corner and hit his head really, really hard. Luckily, he seemed to be okay. He had to abandon the race. But yeah, those two Aussies get together in the valley in the roller afterwards. Bahrain look at El Patron and the group behind. Probably he would be stuffed, but O'Connor gets back up, gets in the group. Bahrain try 1-2-ing him. You know, Sosa's bringing people back. They send Valentin Barry Pancha. The PP brothers have been on fire the last 2 weeks, actually. They've been killing it.
Yeah.
And but Barry Pancha also, I don't know if he got brought back or not. I can't remember. Yeah, he did. He right at the end got brought back, but then O'Connor countered. Simon Kerr won from the breakaway store, and O'Connor went clear. And actually, O'Connor, despite getting dropped after his crash on the last hill, main hill, he actually took 3 seconds and some bonies to move up in time and stay ahead of the Bahrainis, Paulsen to Barry. And then coming into the last stage, it wasn't as difficult. Juanpe had a 38-second... El Patron Juanpe had a 38-second lead on O'Connor, banged up O'Connor. The danger was the Bahrain riders to Barry and Paulsen, but actually they were not as strong as I expected, because two reps of a 12K 6% climb where draft is really important. Actually, Juanpe was the strongest in the end, in my opinion. He was like attacking guys. He was the strongest in the end, even on the hills at the end. And it was a small group sprint, 14 riders. Aurelien Paripantra, he had a nasty kick for a climber. He came first, Tiberi second. And his brother, Valentin, came third. Both of them for skinny guys. They look like they rip sigs, those boys. They're like skinny, and then suddenly they drop 1,300 watts on you. Like, what the fuck? Where is that from? It's like Lenny too. You're like, how are you so snappy?
Yeah.
But anyway, nice win for
sure. I will say, Ineos was at this race. They won stage one with Foss. But in addition to that, Thomas was also here. When it comes to Foss, it kind of went as I expected. On the medium climbs, he could still be there, but once the big mountains hit, he fell through the ice. And when it comes to Thomas, I won't lie, I wasn't expecting that much better when it comes to the level in Tour of the Alps, maybe a tiny bit better, maybe a bit more competitive. But is it weird that I'm not worried at all for the Giro when it comes to Thomas, because we're kind of used to him not being in form before the races that he really needs to show up at?
I think Thomas actually was better than I expected on stage four. Well, he came 12th. I'm pretty sure he was helping Foss and dropped him at one point after Fossa got dropped. And yeah, I think the harder the stage is, the better for G, actually. And on the harder stage, he was good. You know, he's with Chavez, Piganzoli, Steinhauser, Pellizzari after doing domestique work. So yeah, I think Thomas was, he was fine. I think he's exactly where he needs to be based on his improvement from Alps to Giro last year. Unfortunately for him, the Giro has the shittest mountain stages ever designed, so there's not actually many super hard stages for him. But that was true of the Alps. In the end, Juanpe Lopez wins. He won his first race in stage three, and then won GC overall, and he performed very, very well, the 26-year-old, on Little Trek. So they'll be extremely happy with that. O'Connor ends up second on 38 seconds. Tiberi third on Tiberi third on 42 seconds. Valentin Paripantra on 44 seconds. I do think Decathlon could have tactically been a bit better this race, but I think they were sort of all in for O'Connor and weren't expecting Valentin to stay so close on GC, but it is what it is. If O'Connor doesn't crash, he probably wins, so at least he didn't crash and ruin his Giro from what it could see. Anything else out of this race for the Giro, Benji?
Not really, I would expect. Like, Pellizzari showed that he's going to be useful in breakaways, that he might be pretty good at the Giro for VF Group Bahrani. That's not a team. Bardiani? I was going to say Bahrain. VF Group Bahrain is a new team. Bahrani. but there was stuff in another space, in another place in Italy. There was another race, Romagna. We spoke about it very shortly, about Giro della Romagna, a few podcasts ago, if I recall correctly. And it was basically, you classified it as Del Toro and Morgado beating up children. Is that how you classified it as a few days ago?
Oh, no, it's they're not children. It's sort of Conti journeyman.
fair enough.
Be a bit more accurate.
Their team was not the almighty team, but there's plenty of talent in that team, of course. You've got Baroncini, you've got Igor Arrieta also in that team, Del Toro, Morgado, then two guys from their dev team, Pablo Torres and Marivut. And I swear, Pablo Torres has had a few races this year where he was pacing. I think not this specific race, but the week before there was a race where he was racing with the UAE men's the elite team. And I swear he was pacing really strongly on a certain climb. So here's what he can offer in the future. And I feel like I've been following junior races more than I usually would. Is that weird? Like Eroica Juniors, for example, seeing Hector Alvarez win that. Like there's been a lot of those races that have come more to the forefront recently than they would before. Is that because those juniors are sometimes already signed up for? For example, Alvarez going to the Trek Dev team in the coming year, if I recall correctly. And is that because those junior riders are more attached to World Tour teams now?
I think so. It's like Alvarez, I don't know, like the name is familiar to you already. Or Baptiste Gregoire like Roman Gregoire's brother just won the Gipuzkoa Classica. An 18-year-old. Does that mean he's second year juniors? Yeah, he's juniors. And he's on the Groupama U19 team. And that's a race which historically has been won by Morgado, Ayuso, Carlos Rodriguez. So it's not a small race. That's why, I guess, just with juniors, if you know they're going to be good in 3 years or 2 years, you got to pay a bit more attention to them rather than them being good in 10 years. So, the interesting note on Romagna is that it started in Lugo and then Morgado's racing Asturias and there's a Lugo in Asturias. So he's going from Lugo to Lugo, but there's one in Italy and a one in Spain. Who did they have on the start list? Pablo Torres is actually good. Duarte Maravot. The way the UAE are using their U23 team is kind of to make a more expanded schedule for riders like Del Toro and Morgado is one of the big functions of it. As in, they fill their World Tour team here with two of the dev guys, and then so they have more numbers to do a 1-1 race because the dev guys can ride up. Like when you look at Torres, I mean, he's done a few U23 races, he did Rwanda, so it's a bit of a mixture. I don't think it's that bad a thing, actually. I think it's good to ride a mixture of races.
It's a two-way street, right? On one end, you've got the fact that the dev riders can go and show up at a level of racing that they might not have done before but might be prepared to do so. And on the other end, it is allowing those bigger riders to have that more expanded schedule because you've basically got more of a pool to work with if you are that World Tour team. So I don't mind it at all. It incentivizes World Tour teams to have that development team. It's how I see it. And I reckon we've seen the same already with the likes of I know Tour de Hungary, for example, for Visma in previous years, those kind of races, I swear there's always like one dev rider or two dev riders showing up. Archie Ryan showed up at one of those races, if I recall correctly, Croatia maybe. Yeah, there's always something
Slovakia.
Like that going on.
You want Slovakia race.
I'm not going to say close enough because I don't know the political situation between Croatia and Slovakia.
But yeah, that was all the racing on the weekend. Lots, as Benji said, actually a lot of U23 and junior races this weekend, like Gent-Wevelgem U23, a lot of those sort of races, which I got to catch up on. There's also this, who's Felix Orn Christoph? Well, he's already signed to, did you mention him?
Yeah. Andermache? No?
Yeah.
He's the his family of Alexander Christoph.
Oh, is he a brother or half-brother or something?
It's in the genes, my friend.
Mm.
I don't know if it's half-brother, but...
He's 18 and Christoph's 36, maybe.
Yeah, but half-brother would mean that one of them is from another's parents' previous marriage.
Yeah.
I don't know how that worked well.
What do you mean?
Let's go to the next topic.
That's all the races. How do we feel about the Ardennes Classics, Benji?
Ooh. I feel like there's the men's side, there's the women's side. Obviously, we've already told our story about the men's classics not being as vibrant, as entertaining as the women's classics this year, is the case in my opinion. But there's like this view of it where I feel like, for example, on the women's, SD Works was very close to winning Amstel. We were just literally celebrated too early. And they were very close to winning LBL, where Damien Vollering bought the last kilometer. So I wouldn't say that they... It's weird. They were definitely not as dominant as last year. It's definitely a disappointing result for the team of SD Works. But I wouldn't say that they were necessarily... not competitive in it, in the same way that we see in the men's and the Cobble Classics Quickstep showing up, for example. Does that make sense? Like, they were there, and I'm not confident for Vollering's Tour, for example. I'm still confident for that.
Yeah, they didn't just come and ride away whenever they wanted. Like last year, even when they made this, we spoke about similar mistakes last year,
mm-hmm.
but the watts were so big and the difference is so big that they covered up those problems, whereas this year they didn't.
But what I mean to say is that because of these Ardennes, I'm not necessarily worried for the Tour de France from for Vollering. Because her levels was still on a good enough level where I see the potential to be back at the level of last year by the Tour de France from.
Yeah. She it wasn't like she didn't get dropped.
Yeah.
She didn't get dropped. If she's getting, you know, just hard dropped in parkour that suits her. And it's also not like in flesh, she also could have won. It's not like she was shit in flesh. She rode the whole front of the Mer de Huys. So you're right. Like, now the question is whether they will sort out whether they're going to ride for her or whether she has to ride for Capecchi's points jersey. I don't know. you laugh, but.
But yeah, I agree.
Yeah. On about the Ardennes, I mean, yeah, it's. They happen like every year.
Yeah.
I got the historical data of all like the Lantern Rouge highlight videos. I've got the historical data of the podcasts. The Ardennes never perform that well. There's just not that much interest in them compared to the Cobble Classics. Even opening weekend is much stronger, much, much stronger. And,
but also,
yeah,
I feel like it's logical because. A lot of the Ardennes parkours, Amstel, Flesch, and LBL. Yes, last year Amstel opened up very early, but on paper, the usual business is that it opens up relatively in the last 30 kilometers, like the Hill Classics. La Redoute for LBL is the case where it opens up. Maybe we see some stuff beforehand, like should they pace or should they not after a crash, but La Redoute is where the action is going to happen. And then Amstel... Kürtenberg is kind of where it's at, from Kruisberg to Kürtenberg, because before that you've got a major flatter segment, and the hills that come before that flatter segment is so far out that no one really gets away on those segments because people then neutralize them, and I don't know. I've got this vibe that Hill Classics only open up in the last 30 kilometers, at least these hill classics. Maybe Strade is completely different, but these aren't for me. So I think that adds on to it. If I see a 100-kilometer full-blown race, like, I don't know, Paris-Roubaix 2016, stuff like that, most Paris-Roubaix, most Tour of Flanders open up relatively early, and I think that's a factor.
Yeah, I think so. And maybe particularly with Amstel, I mean, people sort of understood the Kouwberg finish, but yeah, there's not the, they don't have the same aura as the Tour of Flanders, Koppenberg and Paterberg, the climbs. Okay, Redoux does, or does now, but it, yeah, it just, they're not all monuments are created equal. That's why the sort of designation is very arbitrary, because like the Tour of Flanders and Roubaix are much, much bigger and more prestigious races than Liège. That's just a, the data, viewership, and everything. The way the riders even think about it themselves,
yeah,
in my opinion, is lends to
LBL
that.
Is often for GC riders part of the build-up towards a Grand Tour, like the Giro.
Yeah.
And RV and Roubaix will never be that. That's a final aim for a classics rider. That's also part of the factor of which riders are riding those races. GC riders are going to ride these hill classics races, and that's an effect of that, I would see. And that's also part of the reason to me that Lombardia is like that, because GC riders have to somewhat choose between Grand Tours and therefore leave the monuments a bit to the side, or have them as one of the goals, for example, do the Tour and then build up towards Lombardia again. That makes it so you never have every single GC rider, every single candidate for that parkour at the start. Because one person might arrive at Lombardia with full preparation, while the other just did a Vuelta and might be washed. So I think that's a factor.
Yeah, I don't know why more GC guys don't prepare properly for Lombardia, because when you look at the watts, it's like, compared to the rest of the year, mm-hmm. they stay really low, the watts on the final climbs. I know it's a hard attritional race, but yeah, it always does surprise me. Like, it's a monument that, because Pogacar's not been dominant in Lombardia yet. Okay, he still won it, but he actually hasn't been as dominant. Now, he's better this year, but yeah, he's not just come done 6.6 for 20 and knocked everyone out of the park. Like, it's been more of a close race.
I'm going to invent a new topic here for a second, because you're speaking about Pogacar. Let's say Pogacar rides a Giro. He's likely to win the Giro, is how we see it right now. He's the ultimate favorite by far.
Yep.
He rides a Tour de France afterwards, depending on whether Vingegaard or not can ride it.
Remco.
He might also have a big candidature of winning that race. Let's say, hypothetically, he wins the Giro Tour, Pogacar. Yep. If he wins Giro Tour,
he'll do the
what thing. Should he do then? Because World's Olympics...
He'll do the Vuelta.
I think so. My initial thought was, it's so limited, the chance of having a Giro Tour victory in your career, that you kind of have to go for all three when it happens. But on the other hand, he will likely also do Worlds and Olympics. So then his calendar is going to be like, Giro Tour, Worlds, Olympics? Well, is that the order? No.
No, Giro Tour, Olympics, Vuelta, Worlds.
Yes.
And Worlds suits him more than Olympics.
I think so too. But then, does riding the Vuelta in between there make his schedule completely unbearable?
So that would be 63 Grand Tour race days. He's done, I just checked, 10 race days. He's not so far. So that's 73 plus Olympics, Worlds, 75 race days. And the Giro, I think the idea would be for him to cruise around in the second week. So like, not all race days are created equally, you know?
Yeah.
Like, a Giro sprint stage is not as taxing as a one-day classic. So 75 race days would be a lot. If you win the Giro and the Tour, you have to do the Vuelta. You might never have that opportunity again during your peak.
I agree with your take on that. I think so as well. Of course, you've also got Giro Tour World Champion, also fucking great, eh? Like, yeah. I'm not going to be at the end of it. If he doesn't ride the Vuelta and he wins World Championships, I'm not going to be like, oh, Pogacar, you could have gone better. Like, sorry, but at that point, we're just looking at a hell of a year and the best year of his career by far. So, I don't know. It's just something that came in my mind when I thought about the possibilities of Vingegaard not being at his best at the Tour de France.
He's got to win the Giro first. Anything can happen, obviously, 21 days. But yeah, he's won Lombardia three times. Worlds is in Rwanda next year. That should be pretty punchy. So there should be many more. The World Championships, they never put a flat sprint anymore, unfortunately. So he should always have a chance to win Worlds.
But if World Championships was a flat sprint, our World Championships preview would basically be a sprint preview.
Yeah, but flat races are actually good. Flat, I'm sorry, but what have been the best World Tour races so far this year? Sprints. The sprints are the most competitive aspect of World Tour cycling right now. There is a larger pool of riders that can win the sprints. There is more uncertainty in the last 3 kilometers than other races.
I'll be honest, so far this season, I don't have a race that pops in my head when I think, oh, this was the best race of the season. I feel like that hasn't happened yet.
Tourelle stage 4 was pretty good.
Sorry, but fuck off with that.
It actually was.
It was a solid race, but I ain't putting that on the pedestal of best race of 2024, dude.
Paris is pretty good, I would say, of the World Tour stage races.
Yeah, but I'm missing something.
What happened? Paris? UAE final stage was good. Her feet was
really
good.
A problem. We're forgetting races.
Well, I hadn't turned my mind to it, but the women's is better. But yeah, the men's, there's been some good races. Romandy actually looks pretty good. But speaking of people, who should they change their schedule? Patrick Lefebvre did an interview with La Dernière Heure. The last hour. He needs to revamp the Cobble Classics team. The English translation was done by Cycling News. And he said I'm not going to read through all of it. The point of it was that Remco, he ponders, according to the copy, ponders sending Remco to Milan San Remo and the Ronda in the reboot of Sudal Quickstep's Classic Squad. I mean, point one, Remco doing San Remo to me is a no-brainer.
Yeah.
I think, like, that sort of climb, he's so aero. It's a Grace Nibali one. I think they don't have any Alaphilippe's gone next year. I think that's a no-brainer and also doesn't add that much. It's not like a Paris-Nice, which really is a tough, tough race. So, but what about the Ronda?
Well, first, I want to look at how the team has evolved because they've gone from this sprint/cobble team in the past with every now and then having a GC rider like Uran or Enric Mas, for example, for a year or something. But we've gone through this evolution of now having Remco and building that team around Remco. I wouldn't say that there have been many riders that disappeared when it comes to their cobble team, but the ones that were there deteriorated significantly to the point that they're not competitive right now. Asgreen is one of those names where he should still be competitive, but isn't. And
yeah, what is he, 27?
Sorry?
Gaspar Asgreen is 29 years old.
Yeah. And like, when I then think about they're signing GC Domestique's team around Remco, they signed a few in that sense, as in we're looking at Mikel Landa like that. Yes, they have stopped signing cobble riders, but they tried signing a few talents like Lamperti, Manier, stuff like that to try and build that team. Like, that still exists. But I'm not sure. Would not building a team around Remco have allowed them to, for example, sign an Arnaud de Leeuw, for example, last year?
I don't know.
What I'm trying to ask is
like,
there
do you mean
budget
from money or
them?
Space?
What, sorry?
Do you mean money or space roster spots?
Money.
Yeah, probably. I mean, like, how much of these guys they signed? They're all cheap, right? Outside of Landa. So that would suggest
Moscon,
I mean,
too. Like,
Moscon, yeah, be on a cheapie. Manier might be not cheap for a Neo Pro. Same with Lamperti, but relative to an established World Tour Pro, they'll be cheap. All Special are chipping in. So, I think you're right, Benji. I mean, and then when was the last time they signed a big classics rider.
I mean, they
developed them themselves normally.
Yeah. Asgreen developed in the team. Alaphilippe developed in the team.
It was Gilbert back in 2017.
Yeah. Which they gave a lifeline.
Yeah. And that was also a buy low. So.
Yes, but also that's not in the era of the Van der Poel, Wout van Aert, Pogacars at the top of their game. We were in that middle period where someone like Van Avermaet could still win. Like, put Van der Poel, put Van Aert, put Pogacar in that era, and Van Avermaet doesn't clean Roubaix and RVV and stuff like that. So I think that's part of the era, as in they just missed out on one of those big guns when it comes to the classics, but got a GC rider like that, and they're building around that. And yes, that's costing them in the classics, but also the level of their cobble team is not that great. But will sending Remco to RVV fix that? I think a first time Remco riding RVV, I'd like to see it, but I can't place how effective he's going to be, because on one end, I'd kind of think that he'd have to be in more of a role of anticipation, because if Pogacar or Van der Poel go on like Paterberg and stuff, then I'm not sure he's going to be in position or on the cobbles.
I think Paterberg's more okay. I think it's something like Stationsstraat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, or Stationsberg rather. When Van der Poel launches, it's not that steep.
Yeah.
And it's like you got to be a sprinter.
Yeah.
I think those ones kill like a 63 kilo rider. Even Poggy is not immediately in the wheel when those big guys launch on those sort of ones. I think the cobbles will be tough. The point is, what other options do they have? They have signed a lot of like talent, like Hilhelders, Van Gerluwe.
Jesus Christ, you're torturing me.
Pepijn Reinderink. These are all the sort of ChatGPT names that you could be in 3 years. A good classics rider, Lamperti, seventh in Kerner. The problem is these guys are not winning classics next year. Maybe Lamperti, you know, but the other ones are more of a slow burn.
And like you said, Remco is their best option to do something in the cobble classics, but does that then come at the cost of races afterwards? Because the likelihood of a crash happening in those races is significant enough. So it's the balance of whether they're desperate enough to win one of the Gobble Classics, and I think they're reaching that point.
And they've got a lot of money coming off the books, which is Asgreen and Alaphilippe for next year. So do they want to make a splash with the Classics riders? Do they go for a Bettiol, a Schoens, a Søren Krogh Andersen? Again, are any of these guys actually moving the needle in terms of winning Classics?
No,
not really. That's the problem.
Those are the classics have often been won by numerical advantage of teams. Also in the Quickstep days, in the Visma days, in the Alpecin, it's different because Van der Poel is just a one man army in that time with a solid enough team around him. And then I'm looking at the people that are on the market. Then you'd need multiple of those riders that are in that top 15 region of classics to be able to once again have that numerical advantage to be able to be that competitive. But then again, those riders could get top 10 positions and top 5 positions where the team didn't do that this year.
And Betty, I would like to see Betty all in a different structure before it's too late. So like the talent that guy has is crazy. I just like to see him in a slightly different structure. While he's turning 31 this year, I mean, he's probably got 3-4 years where he could still be there. But
do you want Quickstep to spend money on Betty all?
Yeah, I do. Actually,
really?
Because there's a stage racing domestique. He's unbelievable. He can do 6 watts per kilo for 20 minutes, like in Olympics, and he can ride the front on cobbles and gravel. Unbelievable.
Yeah, but
rider.
He's so inconsistent.
That's why I want to see him in a different structure.
Mate, it's
no,
a risk.
No one climbs on EF. No one can climb on EF. They sign all these nice riders, none of them can climb. Yeah. So, yeah. He's like, I agree though. I mean, maybe, you know, there's an article, he's like the last romantic rider. Maybe he doesn't want to weigh his food and sit on top of a mountain for 3 weeks. I get that. So, but I think Betty Ol's the only one I could But he would need to want it. He would need to want to go.
Yeah.
Want that.
Why does Quickstep? I'm not sure those two.
Varus Quickstep, huh? Where Varus Quickstep, huh?
Why are we even discussing this? The chance of those two coming together
is he friends with Gianni?
With Moscon, I don't know.
Could be. So there you go. And there's okay. Other rumor, which was said on Ryder in the Liège broadcast, is that a women's Milan San Remo is confirmed for 2025. Well, not it's not confirmed. Ryder said that it's happening, which is, I think, pretty cool. I think Luke is reminding me that Carapaz nearly followed Poggi yesterday. I remind Luke that I do not consider 4 minutes a climb. The climbing database starts at 5 minutes. Punching, they're all right. And also, he cracked himself and fucking finished 30th. So, but yeah, listen, poor El Hagua, I gotta correct the corrections or push back, otherwise we'll get out of control. Sanremo, Benji, isn't it just it'll be exactly the same final? They'll just have a bit of a shorter, like 170-200 Ks, and then they'll just do the Capo Mele, Cipressa Poggio, descent finish?
Yes. My question surrounding it is that, first of all, if I recall correctly, it should have already existed because they said it would exist this year already a few years ago. So seems like that has been postponed to now maybe 2025, which is the rumor. I'm thinking also the combination with Trofeo Binda, which in the same weekend. I can't remember. It's not the same day. I think it's the day
Sunday. Binda's on the Sunday.
So that might be a combination that some riders might then do Saturday, Sunday. Is that realistic? Probably it's in the same country. So I'm guessing they can travel enough. But yeah, those are the things I'm thinking of when it comes to this. I like that it's coming up. I like that Milan Sanremo will be on the women's calendar, hopefully. Just I don't have that much to say for it. Who would win it?
I don't know. This is the occasion where there's already a World Tour Hilly race on that weekend with a solid history where the organizers have been getting a good start list for years. I kind of wish... Yeah, it's actually the one where it wasn't as necessary to happen. Like, Binder had, Balsamo, Capecchi, Peterser, all the good riders, and Balsamo won this year. It's like, if you weren't watching Binder already, I mean, is that the argument, Benji, that we didn't cover Binder this year
because
it was on a different day, but if Sanremo's on the same day, women's before, will we cover it? Yes, like we do with Liège and Flesh. So I guess that's the argument for it, that it will bring more attention. Who will win? Capecchi.
Wibbers.
Nah, Cipressa's too hard.
Nah, not having it.
Canyon Shram got to pace that super hard, drop the Wibbers.
Not having it.
I actually think the women's will be quite interesting because the climbs are done at a lower speed and are more impactful than the men. So I think it would actually be very, very interesting. It'd also be good who's a good descender, who can come back, who can hold them off. Like Nivea Doma, if she punches away clear, she's an elite descender. It would be a very, very interesting race. So, I hope it happens.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Contract extensions and rumors. I'm not sure if we mentioned Tratnik Dobore yet. That's from... Benson at GCN. The rumor is he goes to Bora Hansgrohe in 2025. And that's the rumor. They already were rumored a week and a half ago to get Pithy. This is not that surprising, Benji.
It's not that surprising. Roglic is there. Roglic has gotten Trotnik to Visma in the first place. Yep. Now, towards
the
Bora.
Same size.
In addition to that, Trotnik's also at a point where he's just won a classic, so he's a bit more expensive. So He might want someone to pay a little more than his current salary. So maybe that's also part of that. I think that's all together. Now, is getting Trotnik, who seems to be in the best year of his life, to Bora going to result in the same level of Trotnik after that transfer? I don't know, because this year has been he's been good for years, but this year has been an outlier in terms of the step up, right? He's been significantly better this year.
Yeah, he would have been really, really good last year in the Giro. It's a shame. He would have been killing it in the Giro. Yeah. I think it would have changed the race a lot, but he got hit by the car in the recon of the TT before stage one. But you're right. Like, he never showed this sort of consistency in classics. He showed more flashes at Bahrain. But at Bora, can he continue it? I mean, he's motivated. He's one of those guys. Tratnik is... I like riders like Tratnik, you know, because...
Yeah.
He was on CCC in 2018 when he was 28. He was on Amplatz BMC, the Conti team, Austrian Conti team that had Herminator, Pernsteiner, when he was 26. And look at Tratnik. Since then, in his 30s, he won a Giro stage Omloop. If he didn't have half his season wrecked last year, he would have won. He would have been even better and had a better palmarès. It's like, okay, yeah, we look at all the juniors now. We look at all the, you know, oh, I've got to get that 20-year-old pithy. But, like, there, you cannot assume that guys will collapse at 30 years old either. Mike Woods,
yes,
in his 30s, coming from a different sport, killed. It's also, you got to look at their training volume. What was Tratnik doing before in his early 20s? What was his training volume? He was on Quickstep in 2011, and then he's in the Conti wilderness for 5 years. And then he's such a good... And there's a good rider in there that Bahrain brought out, and then Visma polished a bit more. I don't know what my point was about.
Me neither, actually. I was waiting for the punchline.
Oh, it's more like Tom Skuens. I wouldn't be scared about signing Tom Skuens, even though he's 31. He's improving. Yeah, he didn't get any opportunities before.
32, right? No? 1991?
32, yeah. I'd sign Tom Skuens. Like for 2-3 years. It's more the Mollema contract. I don't know about that one, but... I think it's a net positive for Bora. I think it's good for them. And
I think it depends on the money.
They got it.
Is the case with every single transfer.
But they got the money.
Yeah, but you can have money and still want to spend it as efficiently as possible, is how I see it. But
well, Steve Cohen, that.
Tratnik aside, Wibus, you said it at the start of the podcast, is now confirmed to stay at SDWorks until 2028. So Kopecky has already confirmed to be staying. Vollering's arguably departing out of the window. The team has also released a press release that SDWorks and Pro Team, both sponsors, have extended to 2028. So that's security when it comes to the money for those riders as well, which is good to hear. And the third update when it comes to the team is an unfortunate one, a sad one, because Anna Shackley was forced to retire due to heart irregularities last week, if I recall correctly. So that's a very sad disappearance from the sport. Hopefully she can have that post-career support either by the team or by, I don't know, is there something set up? I reckon there's something set up in the way that, like, CPA-wise, or to help riders that establish a post-career, post-racing career? I think there's something. I swear there is.
I don't know. Maybe the women's CPA helps them. I'm not sure. But she's young. It's very sad to see when riders have to retire like that. It's, you know, there's almost like two or three of these a year.
Yeah.
At least one a year the last few years. Cobrelli, Van Hooijdonk, Shackley. There's more, I'm sure, in even the Pro Conti and Conti categories. So, yeah, real shame. And she was, isn't she like top five to Lavigny? Like, her 2023 was, she really, really, like, was looking good in 2023. So, second in Lavinia, sorry. And second in European champs. So, big shame for her, but hopefully she lands on her feet. She's 22 years old. Whole world is ahead of her. Other news is Kuipers joins Antimarché. I don't know who this is. He's 24.
He's basically a Belgian ChatGPT cyclocross rider. that, just, according to Luke, has grown through CX quite quickly and is now, I think he's written LBL actually. Well, he DNF'd it, but he has written it. And he signed for Intermarché immediately, right? Am I dumb or is that true?
Yeah, yeah, he's on the World Tour team now, from now until the end of 25.
So I'm curious what that will do. According to Luke, this is the messiah of Belgian cycling.
It looks like they got his schedule looks like a lot of the gravelly races, which makes sense given his background, Trobriand and Antwerp Port Epic. He had quite
baby
a lot
Baby Vermeersch?
Johnny Vermeersch.
Baby Vermeersch? That's how I see it right now.
Which one? Florian or Gianni?
Gianni.
Johnny, yeah. And Florian Vermeersch was rumored somewhere, Benji.
Yes, to like a bazillion teams. Visma to Bora. So, Visma. I don't know. I'm just happy he can walk and ride again. So,
well, yeah, he's still out with a fractured leg, which happened in Murcia, no? Yeah, in Murcia, his first race of the year. The 25-year-old in a contract year. So, he missed his biggest race of the year as Roubaix, which he came second in 2021. And that's an, hopefully he comes back. His, I mean, PCS provisional is he's back at Britannia Classic in August. So,
but it's also with Vermeersch dropping out, even before the lead dropped out at Lotto, you notice how important a factor like that could be in races where you would not expect. For example, Omloop, you look at the lead getting caught with the rest of the attackers. In the last 10-ish kilometers around Muir somewhere. And then afterwards you have Pollard and Trotnik attacking. Lotto's riding like an animal trying to get those two back. But imagine if Vermeersch is there also to help pace there, that might make the difference significantly less and potentially helps them to catch the rider's head. Then again, the least positioning for the sprint would have been fucked anyway. But you know what I mean, right? Like
how one
rider can change, like Pollard and MSR when it comes to UAE could have changed a lot for me.
Vermeersch, he just cannot climb or punch. It's a problem. I don't know if he improved it, but then again, that group was so big, you'd hope he was there. You'd hope he was there. So
he should be at least.
And you got to factor in that he was 24, 25. He would have been improving as well.
And he had a billion mechanicals last year in all those races.
Yeah. The last bit of transfer rumor is, well, not even a rumor, frankly, it's just open flirtation, is Total Energy with an Alaphilippe. And the Total Energy team boss said that they basically really like Alaphilippe and they want him. They're like, we want Julian. And but then there's some long quotes from Cofidis in an article by Stephen Ferrand about Cofidis wanting Alaphilippe, which is like, I mean, Total Energy, Benji, I got no sympathy for them.
Me neither.
If Total, the sponsor, if they're investing a lot of money in the team, and they're a big company, by the way, let's not forget.
Yeah.
Total Energy is a multinational company. Like, they are not there to just be farming, at least I don't think. I don't think they're sponsoring the team to come fifth in Paris Camembert and get a slice of cheese. They are wanting results in big races on the tour. And if they're going to piss all the money up against the wall on bad signings and then the sponsor leaves, then you fucked up.
Like, signings again, Boson, Hagen, Alaphilippe now. Like,
they've been burned, Benji. How do you do it when you've already been burned? At least Israel got burned. They're learning, right? Okay, yeah. Israel fucked up for 2 years. Sang? No. Yeah, but since Fuglsang, they've gone Stevie Williams, young guys. They have
Dylan Turns, young guy.
Yeah. That's a bit
at least he's relatively
at least
performing.
He was good, like.
Yeah.
Alaphilippe. And they offered him they said they'd match his Quickstep salary initially. What can you say, really? I mean, I don't want a guy not to get paid, but you got nothing to say.
Well, I gotta be honest, the Total, these are signings where the conversation is not, are they going to perform results under that team. I don't believe Alaphilippe will perform results under Total Energy.
How bad will they be?
It's more of, will the marketing be enough to justify the amount of money they spend on that rider? That's the only thing you can think of.
Yeah.
And like, sorry, but I don't give a fuck about marketing transfers.
Because yeah, there's other Frank, like, why are you, if you want to make a big splash, there's Lenny, there's Gregoire, there's the PP brothers. There's Frank, there's a lot of French riders going really well in their 20s. Maybe they're going to go for them as well. I don't know, but
doubt it.
It is so strange, right? That you do have, okay, Groupama, okay, they got no budget, whatever. Decathlon and Total with money. Cofidis just got announced this week. The Cofidis, the company, extended with the team till 2028. And Lenny's going to Bahrain.
Yeah, but why the F, if I'm Lenny Martinez or Romain Grégoire, would I sign for Total Energy or Cofidis? Why would I do that? Like, I'm at Groupama, for example. If you're Parapentre Brothers at Decathlon, the teams that they are on might unironically be the best French team for them in view, to the point that...
Well, they are. They're the two best French performance teams.
The better teams that are on the market than are the non-French teams. And if they then see a Jorgensen going to Visma and performing well, stuff like that, getting chances in Cobble Classics, then Romain Grégoire might think, okay, maybe I should go to a team that is not this team, and I don't really, I won't get that performance on Cofidis and Total Energy. Decathlon's performing well right now, so maybe that's an option, but I then see another World Tour team like Lenny Martinez with Bahrain. Maybe that can be my option, stuff like that. That's how I see it more.
I got you. Yeah, so if they're actually going to leave a French team where they're performing, they're not going to leave it to go to Total or Cofidis. They're going to leave it either for massive money, or not even. They're going to leave it to go to... And I also think there is a cultural shift too. Like, every young French rider just about speaks English.
Yeah.
Every, like, the Spanish juniors, like, you've met them, Benji. They're not so, oh, I got to always ride for Movistar. No, they'll go, they want to perform. Yeah, Trek. They want to perform. Like, they're global citizens. Same with the... So there's not that just traditional, I'll stay in the same team. But yeah, Total got 1, 2, I can't even count. Over half the team's out of contract this year. But the...
When I saw the list of topics we were going to discuss this year, this podcast, I thought, oh, this looks like a 30-minute podcast. Bro, we are yapping. We are yapping so long today, and looks like there's a lot to say, huh?
Okay. Tour de Romandie preview. Really, really good start list. Have I mocked this race in the past? Yes, unashamedly. The start list is back. It's very, very good this year. With even though it is in an unfortunate slot in the calendar, in that it is too late for riders to do an altitude camp before the Giro, and too early for any serious tour riders, apart from people trying to get some race days in because they've had an injury or something.
It's noticeable the shift in training camps that way, because if you look 10 years ago, for example, you'd see the Giro riders doing Romandie. So you've had that shift from Romandie being a preparation race to a completely not being a preparation race, just because the preparation for the Giro d'Italia has shifted to a more, how do I describe it, scientific basis, a more training camp basis?
Just before, I mean, not every team was doing altitude, but maybe even 3 years ago, and now it's just like a no-brainer. Like, everyone has to do it, so I think they're...
I'm getting brought to Andorra to ride on altitude.
But even, like, the length of the altitude camps are longer. They're not going up for 7 days either. They're going up for, like, best part of 2 weeks before the Giro, when you include the travel days. And the same thing's happened to Tour de Suisse. The Tour de Suisse... People don't do it before the tour because it's too close. And so Dauphiné gets the big GC guys. But the start list that I mentioned, there is some good tour riders like Yates and Ayuso. But Yates is sort of coming back from the his concussion in UAE, and he was not as good in Abruzzo. They are the best team here by far, UAE. They got Yates, Ayuso, Oliveira, Ivo, Jan Christen, Felix Groschartner, McNulty, Sivakov, which is, yeah, like just an extremely strong team. McNulty has done a lot of race days. He mustn't be doing a grand tour. He's already done 32 race days. This will be his, he'll have done his 40th race day just about. So a lot of race days. The GC favorites are Ayuso and Yates, at least in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where you really see the depth difference between UAE Benji and Visma, especially without Roglic. Like, look at that UAE team, and then Visma is Tratnik, Bowman, Gesink, Lemon, Stanimitet, Tim van Dijk, Vermote. It's like not a realistic rider to win the race or podium the race. Who is a realistic threat here?
Ooh. Well, Bernal is, I think, the rider that will be good.
Oh, yeah, Bernal. Ineos team is strong.
Yes. They've got Bernal, Arensman, Castrovejo, Hayter, Carlos Rodriguez, Oscar Rodriguez, and Maggie Sheffield. So
that's their best young team they got.
Yeah. Well, is Bernal still young? 27. Anyway.
27, yeah, and he's cooking in Liège.
Just feels like he's been around for so fucking long, man.
That's a good team. Simon Felipe, Yates, and Luke Plapp. So there are some Giro riders, i.e. Luke Plapp.
Carapaz. Simon,
Carapaz, Caruso, and David Godu, Enrique Mas, Lenny Martinez. Who else? Luchenko, Brenner, Vosard. Is he here? You got dropped.
Narwhal is here.
I swear Van Aertvelt would have been here if he had not had the knee issue, which he has to have surgery for, unfortunately.
Yeah, but he also would have ridden the Hill Classics. Like, that true, guy's first 6 months of a season were destroyed by the injury he had. And we'll see when he gets back, because he's having surgery on it, like you say.
It's a shame. Gegenhardt, Ciccone comes back. Oh, Giulio's back. He hasn't raced in 24 yet, because he had the... He had a perineal cyst, Luke will check. He had a cyst that had to get surgery cut out and he couldn't sit on the saddle for a while. Thibaut Nice, Vlasov, Hindley, Agita. Fuck, this is the best Romandy it's been in a long, long time. This is a good start list. Alaphilippe, Asgreen. Sprint is obviously thin on the ground because it's one of those sort of races. Hayter and... there aren't really many.
Johnny Vermeer? I don't fucking know, man.
Milan Menton. Dainese on Tudor and Milan Menton.
Yeah, but have you looked at the parkour?
I haven't. We're about
sprint stage is Dainese going to win?
Remember when DSM sent him to Tour of the Alps before the Giro? He just got dropped out of neutral every day. first stage is from Payen to Payen. By the way, Romandy is in the... French-speaking part of Switzerland, so it's actually quite near Aigle, near where the UCI headquarters are. But first stage is a 2 kilometer prologue with a dozen corners.
12, yeah.
It really is a 12. Okay, yeah. I was just guessing. It's pancake flat. This is for a sprinter. Hayter's the favorite. You like Tim van Dijk, won the Sibiu technical prologue a few years ago. He's in good shape. Mm-hmm. I'd like a sprinter here, or a user. Because you need to be able to drop 1,000 watts out every corner. But yeah, I don't know why these exist.
By the way, it's the first race for Thibaut Nice this year.
What's he been up to?
Nothing. Well, CX probably, but nothing in my scopes.
That finished ages ago.
Yes.
He could have done the Ardennes. Why did he do the Ardennes?
I tweeted this a month ago.
Okay, he did CX. That was until the start of February. That's plenty of time to have 2 weeks off the bike and then prepare for the Ardennes.
I don't know why he didn't do it.
Bizarre. Last year he did some classics before Romandy. He actually came second in stage one of Romandy behind Ethan Vernon last year. But the first stage... Stage proper is finished in Freiburg, 166Ks. It's lumpy. It looks like a Caden Groves, Michael Matthews type stage.
Thibaut Nice.
You like him for it?
Yeah, of course. Now that he's back, he's winning every sprint in this race, mate. Come on.
Okay, I'm going with Jesus.
Because like Moschetti and Dainese, I just see this as being a bit difficult this stage.
Yeah, this is a Dorian Godon top five special, isn't it? okay, that's stage
breakaway?
One. So that's punchy. Yeah, could be a break, honestly. There's some hills, some steep hills in the middle. UAE going to control. Stage two is is it a hilltop? Is it a mountain? Medium mountain finish, hilltop finish, mountaintop finish. It's basically 7.6K, 7.5%. Not a uni puerto, but it's not that hard before. This could actually be a break again. Stage three is an individual time trial, 16Ks, hilly. Looks very, very good for Ayuso, that one. That's why it's this GC favorite. Stage four is the hardest overall stage, but also not the hardest finish. The hardest climb in the race is the Ovronaz, 9Ks, 9.5% in the first 40Ks, then some valleys, then another like 20Ks of climbing up and down, descent, some punches, and then they finish on the Leysen climb, 14Ks, 6%. It's not that hard, frankly, as the gradient suggests. And stage five from Vernier to Vernier is a circuit, punchy circuit, looks very, very good for Thibaut Nace type guys, or Jonathan Narvaez, but he is in Ecuador. You know who I'm picking for the GC win?
Bruno?
Nah, he'll lose too much in that TT, I'm afraid.
I'm picking Uzo.
Chef, keep it upright, brother, in the TTs.
Yeah, bro.
So these mountaintop finishes are soft. They're not
hard. Get this man of the grill.
They're not that hard.
Yeah, but he's climbing against climbers.
14K, 6% in the draft.
He couldn't do it at Algarve. Did he even try? I don't know if he tried at Algarve, but...
They're different.
Yeah,
In Tirreno, he only lost 148 on Monte Potrano, and that was a hard stage that Visma nuked. It's actually a really good route.
Should help him a lot.
Arensman should top three this if he wants to keep stepping up, you know?
Yeah, TT's there, climbing, the gradients are okay.
Ineos team is good for this race, I think.
It really is. But I'm going with Ayuso.
Yeah, Ayuso is deservedly the favorite, and he should win this race because he should beat Yates in the TTs. He's good enough to take bonus seconds, frankly, in some of these stages.
He's won every time trial in his career that has happened in Switzerland.
Has he?
Yeah. Last year in Switzerland.
So in that...
No,
I'm
never mind. he lost the first ITT in Swiss. Fuck, my stat is broken. One.
Yeah, so he's probably going to have that 30 seconds through Bonies and TT on Yates, and then there's no brutal mountain where I can see a peak Yates taking that time back. Stage four, I want to see shit hit the fan. I'm really looking forward to this race just because it doesn't have Remco, Jonas, Pog in it, or Roglic. Roglic, it would be fine, actually, but it just seems quite open to me. Yes, Ayuso is the favorite. Yes, he probably will win.
Yeah.
But there's ways he can also lose. If Poggy was here, he just cleans this. Like, there's just no doubt about it. He just cleans it. That's not the case for Ayuso yet, although he won Pays Vasco. So who you got Ayuso winning?
Yes. How many likes does his YouTube podcast need to get for us to consider daily podcast of this Romandy? A billion?
3,000.
But mate, dude, no, we'll have to do it. Fuck.
You're not going to get 3,000.
Bro, get the fuck out of here. Easily going to have 3,000.
You think 3,000 people?
Mate, for sure.
Anyway, 3,000, there's your number. I don't know, I got nothing on. What are you doing? You busy or something?
I don't know.
Always said this is the best race on the calendar. I always said that.
I love Tour de Romandie.
You can quote me on that.
My favorite World Tour calendar race.
I actually am really looking forward to it. I mean, although it could be the soft mountain top finish is a little bit of bullshit. Is there any other races on this
week?
This
is my Tour de France.
It might be better than the Tour de France, so we've got to take a while we can get it. Other races starting this week is the Vuelta a Asturias, and UAE, of course, going to win that. They are sending Pablo Torres, Morgado, Micah, Fisher Black, Shortbacks, Arrieta, Del Toro, and yeah, they're going to win. So, but that's always been a fairly interesting race. That is where Alarcón dusted Quintana back in the day. But there's usually decent stages. The Oviedo stage is quite nice. And I want to go to Asturias. I'll tell you my plan.
Oh, God.
My plan is to... I want to ride... I'm trying to contact the tourism boards, but I'm trying to ride the... I want to go to Asturias and ride the... And Castilla y León and... and Burgos to do the... some of the Vuelta stages.
Mm-hmm.
And film it. Covadonga, Picon Blanco, Moncalvillo, what's the other one? Quito Negro. I want to do that.
Good luck. But,
yeah, exactly. Quito Negro, I looked, is really hard. It's like the brother of Angleru.
Yeah. Same climb, though, just other side?
It's like the same range. It's right there in the Asturias, yeah. I think it's in the Asturias.
Yeah.
But yeah, I always wanted to go. And yeah, Vuelta a Asturias is there, so...
When are you going to do that? Because that's always difficult.
Well, that's the question, yeah. I mean, when there's people trying to make me do Romandy podcasts, I started to get a bit tired throughout the year, and there's not much space in the calendar.
I ironically think the only spot you can do it is between the Dauphiné and the Tour de France, and then Tour de Suisse has to be a one-podcast deal.
Yeah, but no one's doing Swiss unless Vingegaard might do it. It could be possible. I don't know anything about that, but like unless Vingegaard does Swiss, yeah, we won't be doing daily podcasts.
And even if he does it, sorry, but I can't stand another Gran Camino where he beats up everybody by 4 minutes.
The return of Vingegaard, we'll be covering it, brother. He's our fucking shining hope that we're gonna have a good Tour de France.
Are you sure about that?
What, if Vingegaard doesn't go, it's going to be good?
Hey, you told me last year that Yates was going to beat Pogacar.
Dude, if there's no threat, then Poggy won't let Yates attack him. I tell you this, okay? It's why he didn't let McNulty do Liège, and it's why you think
but
Yates is going to be...
But that's where Yuzo comes in.
If Yates gets into yellow, they're not going to let Yates get into yellow. How is Poggy going to take the time back on him?
That's where Yuzo comes in, my friend.
Yuzo is the wild card, actually. Yuzo really is, because like Yates is a team player. He knows the drill. Like he's kind of like Port when Port was on Ineos. But Yuzo is like, you know what? I feel good today. I'm gonna attack. I'm gonna jump in this break. Oh, there's people in this break that shouldn't be here. Guess I'll keep riding. I pray to God. I hope it happens. Like, because the Vuelta was both. The Vuelta had a lot of interest last year, even though it was the same team on the podium because of the internecine warfare. And so that's the only thing we can pray for. And if Vingegaard doesn't do the tour, I mean, Remco as well. Love you, Remco. You can also win the tour. Don't worry. All right,
that sounds like someone saying it, hoping it's true, but not believing in it.
And Quickstep not going so well, are they?
Not really.
So, like, even if he has the legs, based on what I saw in Paris-Nice, the car ain't going to help. But it's a long way to the Tour de France.
But still, then, hashtag free Landa happens.
Well, I mean, he was free in Catalonia and Poggy beat the shit out of him. So, I'm not sure that solves our problem. Del Toro, maybe, I don't know, he's already done a million race days. Okay, unless you got any other news, Benji, that's the end of our weekly show. We will be back with probably next week, the next episode of the weekly show, unless something crazy happens during the week where we'll recap Tour de Romandie,
unless 3,000 likes pop on this podcast.
Nah, I'll start disliking the video or removing likes.
How the fuck are you going to do that?
I run this show.
Just remove the likes and dislikes when it's at 2,999. That's the deal.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Okay. Thanks for listening as always. We'll see you next week. Until then, ciao.